E.T. Phone Home.
I'm just having some brewski beers in my Mojo Dojo Casa house.
Wendy, I'm home.
There's no place like home.
I'm home!
Welcome to the House of Cinema podcast. I am your host, Joe Aragon. With me today, my wonderful co-host, Clara Curtis. And in the house today, a discussion on two movies, Monkey Man, the latest action movie directed by Dev Patel, and The First Omen, the prequel to the iconic Omen movie. Before we jump into that, Clara, how are you? How are things?
Hi, things are good. Things are fun. Busy month for movies. I'm feeling feeling a little stretched thin.
Do you feel a little bit better though? Because we saw a few of these movies at South by Southwest, so maybe there's like less pressure to kind of go watch them in April, or are you trying to watch them a second time?
That's super true. There are definitely like some pretty big ones that we already have checked off, which has been really nice. But I feel like I was seeing slightly less of the big ones than you and
True.
Yeah. So there's been a few so far that I'm like, oh shit, I really have to see that. Like it's ready to go. So I'm feeling, there's just, what a great problem to have.
I know, right? Like, my biggest problem right now is that I have all these great movies. Well, great. Today's conversation, I think, is great. Whether or not it'll be great in the future is, I guess, up in the air, but you know, at least you have Civil War checked off, which is very cool.
Yeah, God.
But I guess today is a perfect example of like you did not see Monkey Man at South by Southwest, so you had to go see it at your local theater when it came out.
That's true.
And we'll get more into that experience in just a second. Before we jump into our conversations on Monkey Man and The First Omen, the disclaimer I will give on every episode is there will be spoilers because we have talked about the Monkey Man a little bit, maybe less spoilers on that end. But if you're looking to go in blind and want like a blind reaction with no spoilers, this will not be it. But come back later and listen to the pod once you've seen the movies. Two movies, I will spoil the episode that we both liked.
Yeah.
A lot. I haven't seen your score on either of these, but through text messages, I know that you have enjoyed both these movies. So
that's correct. Yes.
Spoiler for this podcast episode: we like the movies, but we'll talk spoilers about the movies specifically. I guess we should jump into it. Let's talk. We want to talk about Monkey Man first.
Sure. Yeah, that would be great. Okay.
Monkey Man, directed by Dev Patel, written by Dev Patel, acted and starring Dev Patel. Here's your IMDb summary if you're not aware about Monkey Man. An anonymous young man unleashes a campaign of vengeance against the corrupt leaders who murdered his mother and continue to systematically victimize the poor and the powerless. On Rotten Tomatoes, Monkey Man holds a consensus of an audacious effort from debuting director Dev Patel. Monkey Man dispenses action and socio-political commentary with equal aplomb. Clara, before I discuss this movie with you and discuss some of the audience reviews that made me laugh mightily.
Oh, boy.
What do you think the critic score is and the audience score is?
Ooh. I feel like critics, I think I'm going to go like 89.
Okay.
Audience, I'm going to go like 79.
Okay. Critic score, you are very close. It's at 88%. You're only off by 1%.
Oh,
audience score, you're also very close. It's actually 83%.
Okay. Cool.
So I was going through the audience reviews as we usually do. We don't do it too often on the public side, but if you're a Patreon listener, we always pull like the negative reviews on the audience side to kind just to get like an understanding of where the audience is coming from. Now, Rotten Tomatoes audience reviews are notoriously not the most well-written, maybe not the most insightful reviews. And not just the negative side, positive side, same thing. Usually, this is, if it's a positive score, it's like, that was awesome, 5 stars.
Yeah.
Or like, I love Iron Man, 5 stars.
Yeah, yeah.
Iron Man is not in Monkey Man, by the way, so...
What a surprise.
But I wanted to kind of look at the audience reviews for these particular movies because I wanted to see what the reaction was because I told a story on the Patreon side, but I saw Monkey Man for a second time in a public AMC theater in a suburb of LA. And while I was watching it, I wasn't getting the vibe that the people I were surrounded by was also vibing with the movie. Like there wasn't, the energy wasn't really palpable. Mm-hmm. And I saw the movie initially at South by Southwest with Sydney and a bunch of other people, which was the premiere. Dev was there. And that's such a, you know, we talk a lot about festival brain and kind of sometimes that affecting your experience. So I was really excited to see it in the theater when it came out publicly, because I thought maybe that same energy would be there, and it wasn't. And I was a little bummed by that. I know you've told the story in the Patreon side about your experience, but tell it for the public side. What was it like seeing Monkey Man in like a normal theater on Thursday for you? Could you feel that energy?
Okay, everyone, picture this. I'm so excited for Monkey Man. It's 5 p.m. on a Thursday, and I go to my local Regal Theater in the heart of a little family suburb area. And I walk in, and I buy my ticket, and then I go into the theater, and it's an RPX theater, which if you aren't familiar with Regal, it's like their other premium screening option. So it's big. It's like an IMAX theater big. It's big. I walk in. It's me and one other man, and it's just us guys, and we're there, and it's just us two in this massive theater. And I'm like, okay, slay. And then like a minute into the movie starting, these two buddies walked in. And so then it's just us guys being dudes together, the four of us. We're on a very intimate journey together.
on a quest for revenge.
On a quest for revenge. And maybe, I mean, I was thinking, but maybe they were thinking how beautiful Dev Patel is as a person. Like, just what a beautiful man. They might have been thinking it too. I don't know. I didn't ask. I should have polled, but I didn't.
Four person poll.
Let's see what the stats say. But yeah, the guy right behind me who was in there when I got in there, he was quiet the whole time. And then the buddies who came in were chit chatting away through a lot of the movie. But I am slightly hard of hearing. So I can't tell you if they were chit chatting positively or negatively. Mm. But they were chit chatting.
Unrelated question.
Okay.
When you enter a theater that large, that empty, where are you sitting?
I'm sitting in the seat that I bought a ticket for.
Oh. Thank you, everybody. Good night. What a wonderful podcast. Awesome. Okay, where are you buying your ticket? Where you have the theater is your oyster. You can sit wherever you want. Where are you sitting?
So for usually 99% of the time, I'm sitting in the aisle on the right-hand side.
Okay.
Usually. Sometimes I switch to the left-hand aisle side if that's where the emergency exit is. Mm. But for this, I did want like a full proper viewing experience. So I did go middle, like proper middle. And I was a little nervous because I was like, I'm gonna sit down in there and there's gonna be like all these people around. Like I might not be able to see like I normally can. But nope.
False.
There was no, I was in the front row of my little four person crowd. So I had the perfect view.
Cool. So after your story and hearing that, and you know, after my experience in the theater.
Yeah.
And we've talked a lot about how like sometimes we can get stuck in our little film bubble, you know, on social media and with our friends and on Discord. And it's tough for me to gauge audience reactions to a movie that I loved or a very popular movie. So reading these audience reviews, 83% is still very good. You know, like it's a more than halfway positive reaction to Monkey Man. So most audiences are walking out and at least liking the movie. Mm-hmm. So, you know, only, you know, 27% or 17% aren't really big fans.
Right.
But of the negative reviews, could you guess the theme of why people didn't vibe or like Monkey Man?
Are they transphobes?
No, not. I don't think I saw a single transphobic review, which is shocking now that you bring it up. But
that's
I only went like three pages deep. Maybe if I really kept going back, but not initially, no.
But unfortunately, usually you don't have to hunt that hard for transphobia. Usually,
exactly.
It's
usually,
right at the top.
It's pretty
unfortunately,
it's pretty obvious in the get go.
Okay, so then if that's not the case, I wonder. My guess then is it's people being pretty reductive of the action genre and just being like, "This is just like John Wick."
Yeah, no, not too much of that either.
Okay,
this might surprise you, but a lot of the reviews that I read, the general consensus for the negative feedback was it was too slow for them. And it got too boring during certain parts. And a few of them started venturing. It was hard for them to follow kind of the story. And some people said it was hard for them to even understand the movie because it would switch from English into subtitled portions. And that part, it's kind of silly.
That is silly.
I wrote a couple of reviews down. One of them says, "I will never get those 2 hours back. Don't waste your time."
Jesus.
Like I said, most Rotten Tomato honest reviews are no more than a sentence, and they don't really give you any context as to why they feel that way.
Yeah, not at all. Okay.
The next review says, "The movie was too dark and shot too close for an action flick. I had a hard time keeping track of the plot due to the Indian accented English.
Oh.
Save your money. One of the worst films I've ever seen."
Okay, well, we don't even have to listen to that person because they're just being racist. So.
That's being racist. to go to his previous statement about the action and the way it's shot, there were a lot of negative comments saying they don't love that the camera moves too much or it's edited too fast for them to follow.
Oh.
There were a lot of complaints about like shaky cam and just the general sequencing of the action was too much for some people. There was even a review that said someone felt like they were getting nauseated. Which I want to kind of pick your brain at a little bit later.
Okay.
Last review I wrote down was, "Movie was very hard to understand what was being said. Long and slow moving. Movie dragged. Very bloody. Plot was unrealistic."
Sure. Yeah.
my favorite reviews are when they comment on the realism of a plot, especially in an action movie.
Yeah.
So a lot of the reviews, boring. Action is too hard to follow. People just outright saying they can't understand Indian accented English. And that is essentially kind of the gist of what people were reacting to. Now I want to switch over to you.
Okay.
Clara.
Okay.
What is your immediate reaction after leaving Monkey Man?
I had so much fun. I thought it was such a like thrilling watch. And I think I was particularly struck by how like emotional it was. I think sometimes with action I feel like that wall for sure, because like a lot of the time with movies like this the star is like a man of very few words, and so sometimes that translates well and sometimes it doesn't for me. But I felt like even though like Dev Patel is playing a character in that same space as like a man of very few words, like you really feel what he's feeling, and I thought that was really great. I think that speaks to his range for sure. But so I think that was the thing that was most striking for me coming out of it, was I was like, wow, like I feel like I really like went on like a emotional journey through this, and I really liked that.
You're kind of encroaching in exactly what I want to talk about in terms of like the story and why I really find the movie so incredible and why I feel like I resonate really a lot with it.
Mm.
I mean, the movie really is kind of like a very literal example of like the hero's journey.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. Sometimes I feel like these movies, I think less movies should try to subvert the hero's journey and try to reinvent the hero's journey and just kind of go back to basics. Like a lot of this movie just feels like a very grounded, basic story. But that's why I think it works the best, is because we're not getting like this movie trying to subvert all these tropes. Like it's a movie that's, I think, fairly straightforward in what the story is trying to tell. But I think that's why it works so well, and it's why the ending is particularly really emotional for me. Dev talked a lot about at the Q&A of South by Southwest how this movie is really just about one man, quite literally and figuratively. He starts in the kitchen with like the poor people, then he goes up to one level, then another level, then another level, then another level. And I really like that about the movie.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think part of the appeal is absolutely the fact that, like, his character is not necessarily well established in his space, and you have to see that, like, that drive to, like, get there. Like, I feel like that's very satisfying to see play out.
I agree. And as an action movie, I mean I'm a pretty big action head. I've made it clear I'm a big John Wick fan, and I think that to reduce this movie as a John Wick copycat is not only, like, demeaning to what the movie is trying to do, but it's just incorrect.
Yeah.
It's very clearly inspired by John Wick. No one is denying that. Not even Dev Patel denies that it's inspired by John Wick, but it's also inspired by, like, Bruce Lee and Korean cinema and Bollywood films. And I think all of those kind of inspirations are what make this movie so unique and great. And that's why I love it so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like, too, like, the whole John Wick comparison is really interesting because, like, on, like, the most base level, like, you start John Wick, and John Wick is deeply wealthy. He's deeply feared by everyone around him. And those are, like, two things that are the exact opposite for Kid in Monkey Man. Like, that is not his position at all. So it's like they, like, on a base level, they're so different for me.
Yeah, and that's why, again, going back to why I think it works so well, is that you're getting somebody who isn't a professional.
Yep.
He isn't wealthy. He needs to learn. He needs to train. And then, you know, it's like we've gotten so many of those normal, quiet men who, like, seemingly have very monotonous, boring lives, but secretly they're, like, the best fighter ever. They can kill and kick anyone's ass. You know, the beekeeper, nobody, John Wick, the Equalizer. Like, we have, that is an established genre. And that genre has rights to exist. And those movies are fun in their own right. But this isn't that movie at all. And I think that may or may not throw some people off. And I've noticed it already throwing people off. A lot of people are going into Monkey Man and assuming it is this John Wick inspired film, and then you start the movie and Dev Patel is getting his ass kicked in the beginning of the film.
Yeah, bad.
He's a good fighter, but he's not a great fighter.
No.
And it takes time for him to get to that first big action scene, and he's not even very good. Like, he barely escapes with his life. Any particular scene that you're like, that's your cheer moment, that's the moment where you're like, I'm sold, this movie's great?
Honestly, probably that first big fight he has in the tower, like, in the bathroom. That bathroom fight scene is I think specifically because, like, even though in theory he should have the upper hand, he has the moment of surprise, he has a gun, like, there's so many things he has to his advantage in that moment, he nearly dies. Like, he gets his ass kicked pretty hard. Like, and I think I liked that a lot, where, I mean, before that, like you said, like, the movie opens with us watching him, like, get beat on pretty hard. So, like, there's kind of already that inkling of, like, okay, he's not going to be the, like, super perfect, like, action hero kind of guy. Like, we're not just going to see him miraculously survive everything all the time. And so, but I feel like that fight in the bathroom really, really lays that down hard of, like, no, like, we're not doing that. Like, we are going to see him, like, struggle emotionally for sure, which we see again and again before that as well with, like, his flashbacks, but then we're also going to see him struggle, like, really hard physically, and I like that a lot. I like the toil of a main character for sure. So I think that was it for me. Is that your scene too, or what would you pick?
I was sold pretty early on. I think that the first bathroom scene, I was like, I'm in. But I don't think I knew I was going to be in love with the movie until we get to his second kind of rebirth and return to this hotel and this tower. And when he makes that initial climb, we go into the diner, and it's like, I wish you could watch these side by side, like, his kind of confidence as he walks into the kitchen versus the confidence when he walks into, like, the VIP bathroom.
Yeah.
Like you said, when he walks into the bathroom, he has the upper hand in every single way, but it still manages to fuck it up because he's so nervous, and you know, he's plagued by the memory of his mother that has, you know, been brutally murdered. And so much of his emotion is wrapped up in his motivation that he fumbles the bag pretty hard in that scene.
Yeah.
But then the second time we get to the kitchen, and the way he walks in with so much confidence.
Yeah.
and just takes on anybody who approaches him. Like, I think I like that's where I get like chills, and like that's where I knew like this is it. This is the movie I'm going to be like watching forever.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a specific scene. I think that's just like that character shift that Dev Patel pulls off is magnificent. I like, I'm just like, I'm ready to jump on my seat and fucking be like cheering. I'm having a good time at that point. I think that's where I'm sold if I'm picking one. I want to go back to something you said about, you mentioned about him getting beat up a lot.
Mm.
As somebody who watches a lot of action movies lately, I've seen other people share this sentiment that if the hero in your movie is unwilling to get beat up, I'm not as in on the movie, for being honest.
Mm-hmm.
You saw The Beekeeper? I can't remember if you did.
I did, and I had a lot of fun. I won't lie. Beekeeper, I had a good time.
Good time. Good movie. There's a lot of bees in it, and Jason Statham is cool. But Jason Statham, as an actor in his action movies, doesn't often get beat up. He's usually the guy dominating the fight scenes. He'll get punched once in a while, but he's never really pushed to his limits where he's like, he's going to die, or he's going to fail, or he's on the brink of death. Beekeeper, there's like that one scene towards the end where there's like one guy who really challenges him.
Yeah.
And that's the best part of the movie because it's the first time he actually feels threatened.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, you know, Statham, The Rock, Vin Diesel, all these other more modern action stars. There's like that rumor that they're contractually not allowed to lose a fight. And I feel like those are some of the worst action movies. And I wanted to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. Something very like, I don't know the right word for it, but like maybe... No, cynical is not the right word. I like when my main characters are suffering.
Flawed? Human?
Flawed. I mean, my favorite video game of all time is The Last of Us 2. So if anyone's played that, they know what I'm saying when I say I like stories where the main character is not having a good time. So I definitely agree with that. Like, there is something about action movies where the main guy is, like, pretty much okay that, like, really take me out of it. Like, I kind of, I feel myself check out a little bit because it's, like, you feel safe as an audience member. You feel like you know where things are going a lot better because you're, like, well, he's not going to, you know, he's not going to get that hurt. Like, he'll be fine. So that definitely, like, throws me off for sure.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think that there was an era of action films where the hero was intended to be this figure of absolute truth, of strength. And so to have them get beat up was frowned upon, and audiences didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we've really moved on from that type of hero. And having your action star just be this walking, invincible, impenetrable force, not only is it not interesting on a character level, it's not interesting if for the sake of, you know, fighting and tension. Like, it just, it's not really something I'm into. I do tend to gravitate towards these action movies where the hero or the protagonist is a flawed guy or flawed person, someone who suffers, whether that be emotionally, physically, spiritually, mentally, whatever that be. Because it does add a layer of tension, a layer of relatability, a layer of excitement. That's why I don't mind, you know, that genre of the guy who is secretly an average Joe or an average Joe, but secretly, you know, a fantastic fighter or crime fighter or whatever. I don't mind those because usually those movies, they get beat the fuck up. Like, did you ever see the Bob Odenkirk Nobody movie?
No, but I kept meaning to because I heard that one's interesting. I heard that was pretty good. Okay.
It's pretty good. Like, okay. I'll say it's pretty good.
Okay, okay.
And he gets his ass handed to him for, like, I would say majority of the movie. He is eating punches. And there is something about watching that movie that even though it feels a little repetitive at times, I'm still vibing with it because this guy has to go through a lot to succeed. And I think that's what makes the movie great. So to go back to Monkey Man, yeah, Dev gets beat up a lot to the point where, this is a spoiler warning, Dev dies at the end. And I'm curious to know how you feel about the ending of the movie.
I love it. I think it really speaks to kind of what the film is circling a little bit about, like that cycle of violence of like how like if you perpetuate it, like you can't get out of it. And like I think that is illustrated a little bit in him dying because like he does commit himself, like body, mind, spirit, to the act of revenge. Mm-hmm. And so I think it feels very satisfying that he does die at the end, because it feels like everything he set out to do is done. And it is a kind of a, you have the question of like, well, what would he do if he lived? Like, he doesn't have anyone. He doesn't have any sort of stability outside of that quest for vengeance. So like, it does feel in a way very satisfying to see him kind of die. Like, you're just like, okay, like, this is it. That's the end. I do like that. How do you feel about it?
I love it as well. Mm. I think that what you said is really well said, in terms of like the cycle of violence being never ending. And the only way to really get out of it is when you eventually die. Mm. I also like it as like this kind of final full circle moment of starting from the pits of hell, from the kitchen of the poor, reaching to the heavens of the rich, and the heavens of a godly figure. I mean, the guy he ends up getting killed by is essentially a metaphor of a symbol of a god. He is the person that is has been leading the people in India to, he's been, I guess, misleading them in so many ways. And I think that his final moment is like him ascending to his heaven, and he gets to be with his mother, and it kind of really completes that quest. In that sense. And I think I love that the most about it. So I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
I'm not shocked by it, but part of me is always going to be shocked by an action movie that is not open-ended, because I'm a little bit of a cynic, and I always assume someone in the studio is stepping in saying, we need to keep it open-ended for the potential of a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad they don't. It's a very closed book. This is the end.
Yeah.
Are you shocked, though, that they didn't leave it open-ended at all?
I honestly am a little bit, because there was one point probably near the middle where in my head I was like, man, it feels almost a little bit like we are setting him up, like with like the iconography he's embodying, to become like a staple. Like, we will get like a whole franchise out of this somehow, because of, I mean, even just like him like donning a mask for certain aspects of the story. It's like, okay, like, there's almost like a vigilante aspect to this that like you could see like evolving into something so much bigger. So there was a period of time during the watch where I was like, oh man, like, we're probably gonna get a lot out of this. But then once you get into that final big battle, and as you see him like climbing up and up and up, and he's taking like more and more injuries on, I'm like, ooh, no, I don't think that is gonna happen, actually. I think this might be the end of him. And it was. It was surprising.
Especially because at the end, when he's in that final floor of the building, you know, you have that big painting of this big battle scene where Hanuman, or the Monkey Man, is kind of leading this charge. You're right in the way that, like, if they wanted to continue this franchise, he could be this actual symbol of Monkey Man. And you could have him, you know, participate in so many different vigilante quests to kind of free the people, the oppressed. I'm glad they did. I'm glad they didn't. I'm glad there is seemingly a closed chapter to this. But you kind of assume when you get movies like this, I assume what was going to happen was like, he is stabbed by the villain of the movie, and then you know, you cut to like this kind of vision that he's having of seeing his mother. And I thought maybe we'd see him like walk out of the door in like the diner area or the kitchen area, and like he's like holding his chest, which is, you know, we've seen in John Wick, we've seen in like all these action movies in the past. Which one, you remember in Drive, when he gets stabbed in Drive, and he's like sitting in his car and he's like bleeding, and you kind of assume he's dead because he's not moving.
Yeah.
And then last second, he like turns the key in the ignition and flies with the drive away.
Yeah, Drive is a good, yes.
And Drive, I think, is an interesting comparison, because it's also like a character motivated by revenge and kind of that cycle of revenge and violence. But that's a character, and that's a movie where it ends pretty open-ended. Like, all right, the driver's alive. What happens next? Who knows? He's going to be pursued, blah, 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 blah. Anyways, now I'm just going rambling about other action movies.
That's okay.
I'm just trying to say I like the ending to Monkey Man. I'm glad they closed the chapter of this book. I'm really curious to know what Dev Patel does next. What do you want to see Dev do next?
On one hand, I think I want whatever he wants, which I feel like what we're hearing the most about right now is he wants to do a rom-com.
Which everybody says
yeah.
supports. It's like that meme, everybody like that, that is the response to Deb's yeah. request to a rom-com. I think yeah. anybody would watch that. But he was also just in that Wes Anderson short that won an Oscar.
Yeah. He was
the guy has
that.
Range. He could do whatever.
He really, really could. I truthfully, selfishly, I want more of like the Green Knight type stuff.
Oh, I wish.
We both, we're both diehard Green Knight people.
Big Green Knight fans. Yeah. If you're a big Dev Patel fan in general, whether that mm-hmm. be acting or directing, definitely check out The Green Knight, a movie that I feel yeah. like a lot of people saw, but under the wrong impression. When we talk about misleading trailers, The Green Knight might be up there in terms of misleading. The amount of people who I went into the theater with and they walked out earlier, or I listened to them talk about how much they hated it after the movie. Too many people.
Mm-mm.
Too many people. Because, I mean, the trailer kind of sold it as like this action fantasy movie, and it was like not that at all. I mean, it's a fantasy film, but I would not call it action at all.
No, it's very brooding. Like, yeah. it's very internal.
Yeah. Do you want to see him direct or act more?
I'd love to see more directing out of him. I think what he's doing in Monkey Man's really interesting. I feel yeah. like it has like a very like fresh language. Like, it feels very like I'm new to this kind of uh-huh. feel to it, but I like that, and I think it'd be really exciting to see like the like that mature. Like yeah. I think I just yeah. I mean, just, I would love to give him $1 billion and then he can do
whatever, do whatever he wants.
Do whatever he wants.
I support that. I also would support you giving me the $1 billion, but you know, you can do whatever you want with your $1 billion, Clara.
I would give you a good chunk of it in a heartbeat.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Then we could open the movie theater.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
I will say, I agree. I want to see him direct more. This, in a way, does feel very unpolished. And I don't mean that to be like insulting or Mm-mm. too critical. I think a part of why this movie works so well is it feels unpolished and almost like guerrilla like
yes.
type filmmaking. Like, it feels rough around the edges. It kind of really adds to that charm and almost fits with like the thematics
exactly.
of the movie itself.
I agree.
But I would like to see him continue this directorial career, because the more he works on directing, the better he'll get, and you know, he'll really fall into a certain style that works for him, and that's really exciting, and I like that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I want to go back real quick before we move to First Omen.
Okay.
I'm sorry, First Omen fans, if you're waiting for this, we'll get there, I promise. The comparisons to John Wick, I know, naturally to be made, and that's fine. I actually find that a more accurate comparison for this movie is something like Jason Bourne or the Bourne franchise. Have you watched any of those movies?
I saw one in theaters
okay.
in 2015, 2016, 2014.
Okay, so you probably saw Jason Bourne 2016, directed by Paul Greengrass.
Yes, I saw that when I lived in Montana, but okay. I'd never seen another one before that. And so I was just
interesting.
Like, I was like, look at this guy go. He's got stuff going on. I don't know what's going on.
Not a franchise you can just jump into last movie. That's the last movie in the franchise, by the way.
Oh,
that's not
sad.
The first one came out in 2004. So quite a while ago.
Okay.
So the Bourne franchise is a franchise known for their use of shaky cam. And it's what crucifies them, but it's also why people tend to like the movie. The action is frenetic. It's like cut, and it's not bad editing, it's intentional editing. That's the way they wanted it to be done, and I think it still works and holds up, and a lot of Monkey Man reminds me of that. I like the way the editing is done. Some people aren't gonna be a fan of it though, and I'm really curious if you liked Monkey Man. I'd suggest checking out Bourne Supremacy. Ultimatum, I think, is the best one, but they're all, the first three are pretty good. I'd be really interested to see what people kind of think about those movies compared to Monkey Man. So that's gonna be like my homework to all the listeners right now.
Okay, perfect. I'm intrigued. Okay.
All right, let's pivot. Let's change gears completely. Oh, before we do that.
Oh.
What was your rating on Monkey Man?
Oh, yeah. I gave it a 4 out of 5.
Awesome. I'm at a strong 4.5. Like, nice. I think there are issues. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's natural for a directorial debut action movie. But I really am a big fan of Monkey Man. So.
Yeah. So I feel like sometimes when you do like a 4.5, it, you know, it's one of those things where it's like teetering right on the edge between like a 4 or 5, 4.5. Do you feel like the rewatch really kind of bumped it in the opposite direction of like it's almost like teetering between like 4.5 and a 5?
No, I think it's still teetering on the 4, 4.5. I think at times it does feel overwhelmed by all of its influences and its story, while I think is not hard to follow. I don't agree with those reactions. I do think sometimes it does get a little
caught
in its own webs of complications, and there's just a lot going on.
So. I agree.
I'm just a really big fan of Dev. I'm a big fan of action films, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think when you get towards the ending, you get some of those fight scenes. They're a lot of fun. They look great. He does a great job with the use of color and lighting. The knife scene in the elevator, like...
Yum
is the right word for that. When I saw that at South by Southwest, man, the crowd erupted. And it was just one of those like, oh, the movies are back, man.
Hell yeah. Good. Yay.
So anyways, yeah, big fan of Monkey Man. Highly recommend to check it out if you haven't seen it already. Now we pivot. Now we shift gears to The First Omen, a horror movie. A movie about a nun who gives birth to the Antichrist. Sound familiar?
Yeah. Oh, are you asking me? Sorry. I thought you were doing like a tease for the audience. I see.
Sure. Yeah. Audience, does that sound familiar?
They're here. They're here. They're
Claire, talking. Does that sound familiar to you?
It sure does.
It sure does, because 2 weeks earlier, we got a little movie called Immaculate about a nun who gives birth to the Antichrist. Mm-hmm. However, big difference is...
I mean, a lot. There's a lot of differences. Where would we like to start? Where's your brain at?
The big difference is The First Omen is better.
Oh, yeah, that's funny. I thought you were gonna say the first big difference is that the Antichrist lives in The First Omen.
This is true. The Antichrist does live in The First Omen. Maybe it lives in Immaculate. Who knows? What if that splatter was something else?
I don't think so.
Right. You're right. No, we'll talk more about The First Omen and maybe Immaculate comparisons at the end. But here we go. First Omen, here's your IMDb summary.
Okay.
A young American woman is sent to Rome to begin a life of service to the church, but encounters a darkness that causes her to question her faith and uncovers a terrifying conspiracy that hopes to bring about the birth of evil incarnate. As I mentioned earlier, this is a prequel to The Omen, the original horror movie. Did you watch it? I saw that you watched The Omen recently. Was it to prepare for this movie?
Yeah, I saw The Omen a long time ago on cable television when I was in like high school. So like it'd been, I mean, over a decade now, which is crazy. So I rewatched it right before going to I did a double feature of Monkey Man and then The First Omen. So I got home from work, watched The Omen, and then went to the movie theater.
Pause. I want to ask you this question now.
Okay.
The Monkey Man poster shows Dev Patel exiting a doorway of a red room.
Mm-hmm.
The First Omen poster shows the nun walking out of a door of a red room.
Her name is Margaret.
Margaret, my bad. Margaret,
yeah,
is walking out of a red room. My question to you, Clara: what is in this red room that everybody seems so interested in?
Red room, murder.
Murder. That's what you're choosing. Of all the creative options you're choosing, you're just choosing murder.
I'm doing a Shining reference.
I know, but you could have said like, "Oh, they're leaving the 50 Shades of Grey room."
That would be gray. Why would that be red?
That's what it's called. Isn't it called The Red Room?
I don't know. I've never seen them.
Oh. I'm pretty sure the sex dungeon, like, he, like, takes her in is called The Red Room.
Oh, and is it, like, Red Satin or something?
I also haven't seen all of that movie, but I'm pretty sure.
We're not the right people to be asked. Someone let us know.
Pretty sure it's, like, a red door. I've seen half of the first one, and I just kind of give up halfway through.
Okay, well, okay, excuse me for my reference not being good enough for you, and then you okay. pull the 50 Shades of Grey out of your pocket. Okay.
Well, okay, well, moving on. What are we talking about again?
We were talking about the... I will say, though, I accidentally had a little bit of a hit tweet, because I tweeted that I was going to see these Monkey Man and First Omen double feature, and I posted the posters next to each other, and I think people liked the look of it. And
yeah.
I didn't like that many people looking at my... And then people were replying to it like 2 days later going, have fun. I'm like, I already did. It happened. I'm all done now.
2 days ago, buckaroo, it's over.
Catch up.
Okay, yes. Anyways.
Okay.
That is the synopsis of The First Omen.
Yeah.
The consensus on Rotten Tomatoes for First Omen, frequently frightening, even as it plays within the confines of a nearly 50-year-old film series.
Mm.
This prequel is The First Omen. What?
Oh. It is.
God damn it. It's using the... Okay, look. I'm not going to cut this out. I'm going to keep it in.
Okay.
What's happening? When Rotten Tomatoes uses puns, because I'm reading the consensus literally. It's hard for me to know when the pun is coming.
Yeah.
So I'm reading this, like, oh, did I write it down? Is there a typo? No, it says this prequel is the first omen of a bright future for the franchise in quite some time.
Oh, but then did they capitalize the first omen?
So they did. They capitalized
makes it confusing.
The first omen, and it put in italics. So I was like, oh. So I thought I was reading it wrong, but no, it's just fucking Rotten Tomatoes being cheeky.
Make puns illegal.
I'm not saying make puns legal. I'm just saying I look like a dummy because I'm trying to read the consensus, and it's like, oh, Joe can't read. Oh, he's so dumb.
You are not a dummy. Anyways. You're an English major.
Yeah, well, I make a lot of typos, so there's that too.
I was trying to help you. You don't need to bring that up right now.
I know, it's okay. Anyways, that is your consensus. Critics score, what do you think it is?
I think I might go 89 again.
Okay.
You're laughing already, which makes me know I'm way off base, but I don't care. Audience score, I'm going to say 75.
You're off on both of these ones.
Nice.
Critic score, 79.
Okay.
Audience score, 67.
No.
You're lying. I'm not lying. What do you think these audience reviews... I wrote some of these down as well. What do you think the theme of the negative reviews are?
Are they just going to be like, this is just like Immaculate?
No, surprisingly, not a lot of comments comparing it to Immaculate.
Oh, thank God. Oh, I would have been so mad. Is it people saying they don't like get it because they didn't see the original, maybe?
I think you're giving credit to audience on Rotten Tomatoes for being smarter than they are.
Oh, okay. What's happening then?
It boils down to two words. It's boring.
No.
That is what it boils down to. Here's one audience review. This one made me laugh really hard. Disappointing. Did not tie into The Omen very well. No audio and visual at times, which was annoying and hard to follow.
Huh?
I don't know what that means.
It sounds like they're having projection problems.
I read that as like, oh, did their like screen cut out during the movie or something?
It sounds like it.
I don't know. No audio and visual at times, which was annoying and hard to follow. Anyways, I want to get to one part of this that I'm very curious about. I didn't rewatch The Omen to prepare for this. I've seen The Omen like a while back like you, but I didn't rewatch it to prepare for this movie. But did you feel like rewatching The Omen helped you appreciate the first Omen more?
Yeah, because I think the first Omen's better than The Omen.
Okay, that's very cool. But do you feel like you would have been able to follow the first Omen less well if you didn't watch The Omen?
Not necessarily. If anything, watching The Omen, it almost like spoiled things a little bit.
With
the first Omen, like I feel like fairly, like not that far into it, you kind of start to suspect that Carlita isn't maybe not the girl, you know, like she's not the like future mother of the Antichrist. And so then like you kind of are starting to see like, okay, it might be Margaret. And then, you know, we get there and it is her. But I feel like I was almost more in tune with that because I'd seen The Omen. Like I knew the nuns and the higher up like priests were bad. Like I didn't trust them pretty much right away. And I feel like that was kind of a downside for sure. And then especially at the end with like, I don't know, they do like all the false endings kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there's like one in particular where like you almost kind of think like, oh my God, like maybe like she's going to get away. But in my head, I'm like, I know she's not going to like get the baby away from them essentially. Yeah. Because like we know the baby goes to the family and the Omen.
Exactly.
So in a way, yeah, it was helpful because like there's obviously characters from the Omen that are in the first Omen. So I'm like, okay, it's that guy. I know that guy. But I also feel like it did kind of like make me more inclined to pick up on where it was going maybe a little too quickly.
Well, is this a problem with the first Omen, or is this just a problem for any type of prequel?
I think you're right. I think it's the problem with anything that's a prequel is you lose some of that like mystery for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You lose a lot of tension, a lot of mystery, a lot of suspense. It's kind of the problem I had with Rogue One. I know this is a really weird comparison to bring up Rogue One during our conversation on the first Omen. Mm-hmm. But I think when you get prequels to widely successful and maybe well-known stories, the obstacle or the hurdle of creating more tension and suspense is a lot larger. Mm-hmm. Because in Rogue One, as they're trying to get the plans of the Death Star to Leia and crew, you know, there's a lot of like, oh no, is she going to be able to do it? It's like, well, spoiler, I've seen A New Hope and they do it. And like, I feel like that a lot of that tension in Rogue One is completely gone because I know exactly what happens in A New Hope.
See, but so I love our brains, and this is why we're best friends, because when you asked me, isn't that the case with all prequels, my brain immediately went to Andor, which is the like essentially a prequel to Rogue One.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like that's almost like maybe an exception to the rule, because it's like we know Cassian dies in like this brutal death, but that doesn't like erase away the tension of like you are waiting to see if he will join the resistance or not. Like that is a big tension point for him, even though you know he will. You still feel the tension throughout Andor, but maybe that's because it's longer format, they have more time to breathe.
Exactly, that could be lend itself better to creating that development of the characters and the plot and the story and setting. I just find that with a lot of prequels of really well-known IP, it's tough. It's really tough for me to be bought in to any sense of suspense or tension when I know very clearly it's going to go a certain direction.
Mm-hmm.
So like when we're watching Margaret, you know, kind of hold her son hostage at knife point.
Right.
I'm thinking, God, it would be so cool and so interesting if she like, it sounds bad saying out loud. Gets that baby, you know? She like monkey man that baby. It'd be pretty cool. But I know she won't, because The Omen is a movie that happens, and you know, we know that Damien is given to this family and The Omen happens. Maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I think the first Omen's biggest pitfall is the fact that it is an Omen movie and that it is a part of this universe, because if it's a separate entity, separate story, where they can go in a direction that's maybe more unpredictable, this movie, I think, lands a lot better for me.
I agree. Like, until we got to, like, all the little false endings and the epilogue and the, the moment where this is the very moment that happens just a split second before the opening of the Omen. Like, that,
somehow
if that was...
Palpatine returned.
exactly that. If that, like, lasts, God, what was that? Probably, like, 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Was cut? this probably would have been like a 4.5, 5 movie for me. Like, easy. Yeah. Like, I ate this shit up.
I really did not like the ending. And we're talking
the ending was bad.
Last 10 minutes. Like, up until the last 10 minutes, it's a banger movie.
Amazing movie.
But you get to that point where, like, they're in the cabin in the snow, and Ralph Ineson's character, you know, walks up, and he's like, telling him they're searching for you still. They're out there looking for you. And he's like, oh, yeah. They gave your son a name.
I know.
She's like, look
at
him.
What is it?
His name is Damien. I'm like, oh, Damien. I rolled my eyes so hard at that point because then it cuts to black. And I was like,
oh. Yeah, I
couldn't. My gut tells me Arkasha Stevenson, the director, did not want that in the movie, but studio were like, no, you need it in the movie. That's what my gut tells me. This movie is directed with way too much style and finesse and conviction for me to think that Arkasha would want that to happen.
I could see that for sure. It kind of almost reminds me of like 10 Cloverfield Lane, where you're getting like a totally different movie until the last like 5 minutes, and then you're like, oh, the movie's in the universe, that's right. And then you're kind of like, okay, that's fine. I love 10 Cloverfield Lane, that's a great movie, but yeah, it's a little bit like, oh, okay, sure, we can sandwich this in now. That's fine.
I agree completely. Mm. Completely. We got ahead of ourselves for a bit. We were reading audience reviews on the Rotten Tomatoes score.
Oh, oops. We didn't even finish that.
No, we didn't. Oops. Another review says this movie was boring.
Boo, you're boring.
Here's another very common complaint according to the audience reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. One says, not the least bit scary, didn't jump not once.
Oh,
waited
my
for
God.
A scary scene. Sadly, it wasn't until almost the very end. It was two cars colliding. Do not waste your money. Watch the daily news if you want more of a scare. I mean, not wrong completely if you want more of a scare.
Well, I would argue it's only not scary if you're only equating scary with jump scares.
Bingo. And I want to kind of expand on this.
Okay.
Have we reached this point with general audiences and maybe film lovers and cinephiles alike where if there is a lack of jump scares, the movie is then not entertaining or good? And if we've reached that point, how have we gotten here?
How did we fall so low?
How did we fall from grace? What happened?
I feel like if anything, it's because of the popularization of the term like art house horror, or like elevated horror, this like this idea that horror that doesn't have as many jump scares and is maybe like a little more rooted in like exploring themes more in depth, like suddenly becomes a boring movie. And like, or like that idea that like, oh, only pretentious people like elevated horror, and like that whole like very like wrong mindset, I feel like has unfortunately become very popular. And I wonder if that's what's happening here, is people are equating like a slower horror as just immediately, oh, boring, it's elevated, it's not for me, it's not for people who like to have fun at the movies. And it's just like, oh, okay, I don't want to talk to you anymore.
I'm going to be more cynical than you.
Fun. I love when this happens. It's not often.
Have we reached this point because of our like transition into a social media dominant world where...
Yes.
The answer is yes, everybody.
Yes.
Well, no, I think that like... this is going to sound like a boomer thing to say, but I think there, in a way, there's some truth to it, where we need that instantaneous gratification. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We need that dopamine hit within a few minutes, you know, whether that be a 2-minute TikTok or a very short video. And if we don't get that often enough, we're bored, we lose attention, and we're not interested. And so is our reliance on jump scares a result from this like just changing culture of needing those like instant hits of dopamine every second?
I like that answer. I think we should go with that.
I think it's a combination of both. I think that
probably
like, the idea of art house, like you were saying, has kind of had this double-edged sword effect in that like some people view it as a way of kind of interacting with more serious, quote unquote, dramatic horror film. And other people look at it as a way of, you know, as like a means of pretension, and people look at it like, oh, that just means it's slow and boring. I think that definitely has an effect, but I think that like we've reached this point where people need to be like, the keys need to be dangled in front of their eyes the whole time.
Yeah.
And if they're not constantly being like rewarded with that kind of feeling, they're checking out. And that's kind of a bummer, because a part of why I really love The First Omen is because there are no jump scares for, there's like one or two, but a lot of it is like just like building an atmosphere, setting a tone and mood, and like really getting under your skin. Like this is like a movie that just makes me feel like creeped out. Like I'm like, I'm scared in the
You're
way
squirming,
that like,
squirming. Yeah.
I'm squirming. Thank you. Squirming. And I think that's why I really, really gravitated towards it. But I'm finding many people just find it boring.
That's so sick. That's so fucked up.
So the last review I wrote down says the movie was more disgusting than it was scary. No jump scares at all.
Oh,
I only
God.
Give this movie one star.
Okay, baby. Go back to preschool. Like,
I don't think there's anything wrong with jump scares either. I like a good jump scare here and there too.
Yeah.
But then if we're relying on the jump scares, it's my problem I had with Immaculate. Is that Immaculate really falls into that like
jump scare.
First hour
jump
scare kind of telegraphed scares that more traditional in a sense. And I think that's why I don't love it.
Yeah, big agree.
But is that why more people are liking Immaculate than something like The First Omen?
Maybe. I think also like, I think Immaculate has a little bit more of the like, the blind fandom fanaticism behind it. Like, Sydney Sweeney's girly pops, like they go hard for her, whereas like The First Omen's a lot there's some great actors in it for sure, but they're
amazing.
They're not as, you know, like in the like A-list movie star discussion.
I mean, I made that argument on the Patreon that Sydney Sweeney, well, I don't know if you were there, I think you were there when I said Sydney Sweeney was probably the most in-demand A-list actor right now. There is no one like that in The First Omen. And that's not to like, I'm not criticizing The First Omen anyway. Everybody in it is fantastic. But no one in that is to the status of Sydney Sweeney. And you're right. Yeah. There is that kind of level of fanaticism, that blind allegiance to a movie simply because it has your favorite actor. That exists for almost everybody.
Exactly. I hope, if anything comes of First Omen, I hope it's that Nell Tiger Free becomes the most booked and busy person in the world, because she's so fucking good in this.
She's amazing in this. Amazing in this.
I could not get over it.
What do you think the critics and audience score for Immaculate is?
Oh, we did this.
Did we do this?
We did do this for
I guess when we talked about Immaculate.
When we talked about Immaculate and Roadhouse and all those. But the question is did I remember those numbers? The answer, no. I reckon audience scores got to be in the 80s. Yeah.
Okay.
I was hoping you'd just be like, yes. And then we would... Okay. Critic score, because I mean, people in our circle have been pretty harsh on it, but I feel like the people like who are like one circle outside of our circle were a lot more kind-hearted towards Immaculate.
Okay.
Critics, I'll say like high 70s.
Critic score 71%.
Okay. Nice. Dope.
Audience score 59%.
Oh, wait, what?
So currently lower than the audience score in First Omen.
Oh.
The audience consensus on Rotten Tomatoes says Sydney Sweeney is great and Immaculate and the concept is interesting, but the movie isn't all that scary and the ending will disappoint some viewers. Then I pulled up the audience reviews just to look at the negative reviews. The first one says terrible. This movie was made for 12-year-olds, which I don't know if that's exactly it. Someone put, trash, don't waste your time. It's horrible. It's disgusting. It's trash. Trash producer, trash director. Don't waste your money.
Oh. Okay. That was heated.
Then someone put, full of jump scares and questions left unanswered. Someone put, no plot, not scary at all.
Sounds like the people who saw Immaculate need to go see First Omen, and the people who saw First Omen should go see Immaculate.
That's what it feels like.
Like, just, they need to swap.
They need to swap.
Yeah.
Anyways, I just find it interesting to see these two reactions to movies that are essentially about the same thing. They are different, and I prefer one over the other, but mm-hmm. it's interesting to see the kind of varied reaction between these two movies. But
yeah, it's fascinating.
At any rate, First Omen, your reaction leaving the theater, how'd you feel about it?
I was giddy at this point. Because obviously Monkey Man was great. So much fun. I saw that right before. And then I come out of First Omen and I was like, holy fucking shit. Like, First Omen is easily my favorite horror movie of the year so far, at least. We'll see what the rest of the year. I mean, Long Legs is coming for me. And that will change my life because I know it will, and I believe in Oz Perkins. But until then, First Omen's number one in my heart for horror movie of the year. And I was really stoked about it. I feel like the things that I was especially disappointed about with Immaculate in terms of, like, that film doesn't necessarily utilize the convent properly. It doesn't utilize the fact that, like, you have a vulnerable woman embedded in, like, a built-in sisterhood. I don't feel like it ever utilized that, like, organically or in a thought-provoking kind of way. I feel like the First Omen does, like, tenfold. Like, it's uh-huh. It's very, very much about sisterhood within Catholicism and how, like, the suffering of women specifically is, like, unfortunately, like, a cornerstone of Catholicism. Like, the belief in that is that, like, women have periods and have painful childbirth because, like, Eve bit the apple first, you know? So, like, mm-hmm, there's mm-hmm. like, those religious practices are built on the pillar of, like, female suffering. And I feel like the First Omen explores that in a way that's really, really exciting and, like, so satisfying to see on screen. So, like, I felt like I floated out, you know, in the cartoons when, like, a cartoon character, like, smells something really good and they, like, float across the room, like, they're, like, so
well, like, when a pie is, like, yeah. the smell of the pie goes out the window and, like, turns into a hand and, like, put it
yeah
like or taps like, them on the shoulder, like, come over here, and they, like, float to the pie.
Yeah. Or, like, or
is
if
that you?
Or, that's me coming out of First Omen. I'm floating. I've smelled the pie and it was delicious. And I'm I'm so happy. Like, I'm not even touching the ground. I'm so stoked. So yeah. I felt really good. How did you feel?
That is so well said that I don't even know if I could put it better into words.
Thank you.
I felt very similarly. I don't think I was floating via pie the way you were.
That's sad.
But I was floating in the sense that I thought that was a much better movie about this kind of mm-hmm. premise than Immaculate. Mm-hmm. And I'm not here to, like, just kind of point fingers at Immaculate and put that movie down. I just think that, like, because it is, the movies came out 2 weeks apart and they're essentially about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's only natural to compare the two. But I mm-hmm. do think that this movie tackles what Immaculate is trying to tackle, but a lot better, like you said.
Yeah.
I think that like I said earlier, I'm a huge fan of creating a certain atmosphere that feels terrifying and scary and really gets under your skin.
Mm-hmm.
There were some scenes in this movie that really made me feel things.
Yeah.
And it was very scary and very uncomfortable. And I was like, that's a lot going on there. I mean, the movie notoriously was NC-17 and had a fight to get to an R rating and get that pass. And you can really tell. I mean, there was that one scene that I don't want to spoil that was, like, I think relatively shocking.
Let me ask you a question. Have you seen Possession from 1981?
gonna make me look bad on my own podcast here, Clara?
Yes. No, I don't want you to look bad. Wait, have you not
I
seen
haven't.
It?
No, it's probably one of my bigger blind spots. It's been on my watch list for, like, the last 2 years, and I just have not taking the moment to sit down and watch it. But I know this is, like, a common, a scene in the movie as an homage to Possession.
Yes, there's a huge, like, homage, and I had a little bit of tears in my eyes because I got so excited. I was like, this is so fucking cool. Like, it's really cool.
Sorry, I keep getting texts and I'm like, worried they're trying to reach me, but they're not.
Oh,
it's
no.
a stupid group text. No, you're
good.
Okay. I've heard from many Possession fans alike that it was a really cool moment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what moment it is. Can you at least, like, point me in the direction of the moment?
After the car crash.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Everything that's happening directly after the car crash before she gets, like, taken to the like underground like ritual space, basically. That is the homage.
I mean, the movie clearly is, I mean, Arkasha Stevenson, a very talented director,
amazing,
knows what she's doing. Part of why this movie also works, and I think you kind of notice it immediately, is that the movie feels like it's plucked from the 70s. Like, yes, it is. It looks gorgeous. And I think that really adds to the entire atmosphere of the movie. Like, it feels like it's a movie that was made, you know, 40 years ago.
Yes, totally.
I'm really curious to see what the reception of this movie will be. At the box office, the first Omen has made worldwide $17 million and some change.
That's just really cool.
Just barely less than Immaculate, which is sitting about $18 million and some change.
Whoa.
So I would imagine over this week and maybe the next week, it will pass Immaculate, which is pretty crazy. I mean, the first Omen does have big studio money behind it to push it more. And it has name recognition in the sense of Omen. But like we talked about earlier, Sweeney is probably one of the biggest stars around right now. A little shocking the first Omen might pass it up. Monkey Man, because we talked about Monkey Man earlier, is currently sitting worldwide at $12 million and some change.
Oh my God.
Which is lower than I would expect it to be. I was kind of hoping to see it clock in like at the 15 mark, but 12 isn't bad.
Okay.
But anyways, it seems like people are going to are watching the first Omen, and I don't know if that's just a combination of there's no other horror movies really out right now to watch, or if it's people are genuinely interested. Are you aware? Have you talked to anybody, friends, family, that are like, oh, I mentioned in the first Omen at all?
Well, no. I told my sister Audrey about it, but she said she'd probably wait till it was something she could watch at home so that
God
she could
damn
pause
it. Audrey, come on, man.
Well, I just... No. It's so valid. Okay, so here's the thing, though. I feel it. Audrey and I go to movies all the time when she's home from college, and we see horror movies pretty regularly, but normally the ones we see are like the kind of goofy one. Like, we saw Escape Room in theaters, you know, like kind of goofy.
I love Escape Room.
Those are fun.
They're
then,
fun, yeah.
Then last year for my birthday, we went and we saw The Boogeyman, which like isn't like a perfect horror movie by any means.
No, it is not.
But it really freaked her out.
It did?
Yeah, I felt so bad. Oh. I felt really, like, it was not good. So I think Audrey's a little wary right now. And I told her, I was like, the first Omen like genuinely freaked me out. Which, I mean, that's kind of hard to do. We talk about this all the time. Like, we're a little desensitized at this point because we've seen so many horror movies. And so I think I did scare her a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. Oops.
Interesting. I ultimately think that people are interested in watching the first Omen.
Yeah.
But from the reactions I've gotten from people, some people were unaware this movie was even coming out. I've got like the whole spectrum of reactions. Some people saying they had no idea it was coming out, all the way to like, I thought this was Immaculate, all the way to people were like, I've been waiting for this movie since I heard about it.
Oh.
So clearly, though, it's made $17-ish million. People are going to go watch it. It's only been out for one weekend now. Do you know what the highest grossing horror movie of this year is right now?
Ooh, let me think for a second.
It sucks, by the way.
So it's a Blumhouse.
It is. It is a Blumhouse movie.
I think I'm going to guess, is it Imaginary?
That's the second highest.
Okay, so Night Swim.
Night Swim sits at $54 million worldwide.
$54
million? Yeah, Blumhouse, as you know, as bad as their movies have been recently, they have the kind of marketing on lock. Like, they know how to get their movie out there and known, and people talk about it, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, those are full of jump scares.
Exactly. Way to bring it back full circle. Way to bring it back. Yeah.
Thank you.
First Omen, a movie that I love dearly, a movie that I think is doing exactly what I want mainstream horror movies to do. And that's the other miracle about this movie, is that it is ultimately a mainstream, big studio-backed horror movie that is taking this ginormous risk of not falling into the pitfalls of jump scares. Is that a sign of hope for the future?
I hope so.
I hope so, too.
That'd be nice.
I agree.
I'd be happy. Rotten Tomatoes wouldn't be, but who listens to them anyway?
I don't know. If you ever, this is, again, it's a reminder for anybody who is like, don't trust the critics, Rotten Tomatoes, trust the audience scores. That's fine if you believe that.
Yeah.
Just read some of the audience reviews and then get back to us on that one.
Yeah, please do.
All right. That is basically the ending of this episode. First Omen, final score on Letterboxd, Clara.
I'm at a 4 because of the ending specifically.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it has
Palpatine returned.
Exactly. It has a very warm spot in my heart, though. So who knows what? Maybe one day I might rewatch it and bump it up just for fun. Why not? Might as well.
I agree with that. I at a 4 as well.
Oh, nice.
4 to 5.
Okay.
The ending doesn't work. There's also that scene in the middle of the movie where the nun goes on top of the balcony and lights herself on fire and jumps off.
Oh,
that
I love
is it. Very, I mean, like, I like it, but that's very clearly, hey, wink, wink, remember The Omen?
Yeah.
And that's like another moment where I'm like, why? We didn't need to do that again.
Yeah, I do agree with that. It's, yeah.
It's a cool moment. It's scary.
Cool moment, yeah.
Well made, you know, well, cool shot. It looks cool. But it is one of those like, hey guys, remember that Omen movie? We're going to do it again.
Yeah, it almost feels a little bit like they were like, oh, well, we have to do this because then it makes the creepy nun even creepier when she shows up later because she's dead now. Which, like, I agree. She gets so much, she's already scary and she becomes so much scarier after that happens. But, like, I feel that. I feel that for sure.
You know, and for all the shit we've given jump scares, the ones that are in this movie are pretty good.
Yeah.
There is one where she's like in her room. I think it's either it's Margaret. She's in her room and she sees like the outfit of her like nun outfit hanging up.
Mm-hmm.
And the camera does this thing where like it moves back and forth and like you kind of cut back to it. And then there's like a nun demon there.
Mm-hmm.
I this scared me.
Yeah, well, especially because it felt very Hereditary where the corner of the room.
Yes, the corner of the room.
Yes, it's like pitch black, like blacker than black. And then all of a sudden there's something there. And they do that. They do that a couple times, actually. They do that in her bedroom and then they do that when she's in the bad room.
Yeah, that's right.
I like good that. Moments, I love man. That. Great, great moments, especially because I mean for those like the sound design is so like that whispering they have going on all the time where it's like you can't hear it all the way but it's there. So scary. I love it.
This movie is good. I enjoyed great myself. I am admittedly a sucker. I jump a lot in anything I watch.
You do.
Clara now can confirm this as they sat next to me during I was hoping to keep it a secret from them forever.
But. I feel like you even already talked about this. When we were at Civil War, Joe was jumping bad. It was really bad.
Those gunshots are loud, man.
They are loud and they come out of nowhere.
They come out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's valid. It's valid.
There were a few times. Civil War might be the scariest movie I saw this year in terms of my physical bodily reaction.
Honestly, yeah.
There were some scenes in that movie where I had to look away because I knew something was going to happen. I just couldn't stare at the screen. I'm about to see it again tonight, and then I'll report back on it.
Perfect.
Cool. Well, on that note, next week's episode will be on A24's Alex Garland's Civil War. Prepare for that one. We have a lot of thoughts on that for sure. Do you plan on seeing it a second time?
Oh, absolutely. I'm like counting down the days. Like, I'm so excited. Oh, awesome. Yeah, I'm cool. Really excited to revisit it. I mean, I loved it, so I'm jazzed.
I'm jazzed. I'm pumped. It's going to be a good time. So by the time we talk about it on this podcast, we should have seen it twice now. So we'll be extra, extra prepared. Well, that is the end of this episode. I want to thank everybody for listening and remind them that we do have a Patreon in which we release exclusive episodes. According to Clara's calculations, we have 140-ish exclusive episodes on Patreon. Is that accurate?
That's about right. Yeah.
That's fucking wild, dude.
Dude, and that's only been around for a year. So, I mean, it's crazy.
We're cranking out good stuff over there. So, if you like this podcast, you want to check out more, check out the Patreon. There's a lot over there to explore and discover. If you cannot, do not stress about it. We will always have public episodes available. Mm-hmm. If you get a chance to rate or review on Apple, that would be greatly appreciated. Other than that, though, next week, episode on Civil War, Claire will be there. Hopefully, Sydney will be there as well, since we've all seen it. And that is about it. So everybody else, have a wonderful day, night, week, and weekend. And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye-bye.